Will the Senate please come to order? Will the members please vote to signify their presence?
Roll shows 19 members present this morning, Mr. President.
Please stand for the invocation by Reverend David Carpenter of the Glacier Valley Baptist Church.
Would you join me, please, as we pray? Dear God, our Heavenly Father, as we deal with the issues before us today, we would be mindful of the seriousness of our task. Grant us, we pray, thy divine leadership as we labor, that we might serve our very best. For this is our prayer in Jesus' name. Amen.
Senator Ellis, would you lead us in the pledge
of allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Will the Secretary please certify the journal?
I wish to certify as the correctness of the journals for the 104th and 105th legislative days.
Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent the journals be approved as certified by the Senate Secretary.
Without objection, the journals are approved as certified by the Senate Secretary. That brings us to introduction of guests. Senator Curtula.
From a school district, it's my real honor to be able to introduce some teachers. Incidentally, this school district has been running the national test scores. Some of them are now the highest in the nation. Very interesting, just in a few years, supplying enough resources. Today, because of the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation, two of the winners of their program have received grants. Two that I'd like to introduce here, and I think I have a couple more that may be here too. But today, from Iditarod School, Helen Cole and Jana DePriest are here. And Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, they have booths at the Convention Hall here, and they're all hoping we'll stop by during the period, I think it's 4 to 6 and maybe 6 to 7:30 for legislative reception. We may also have here Louise Ashman. Is she here? Hello. Could you introduce others that might be with you if there are others from our district? Thank you for coming.
Senator Jackal.
Thank you, Mr. President. I have a guest here also today from the distant community of Akitan. We have here with Alaska Alliance for Science, Mr. Fred Keister. Welcome to the Senate.
Senator Little.
Two individuals with the Alaska Sport Fishing Association. Actually, one is with the Kenai Sport Fishing Association. I'd like to welcome them to the Senate. We have Chris Ellis, and I'm sorry, I'm going to have to ask for help with the other gentleman's name. Excuse me, Phil Cutler. Chris and Phil, welcome to the Senate.
Senator Ellis.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a pleasure for me to introduce this, make that afternoon. In the Ziegler Gallery, a good friend of mine from North Mountain View, he's a well-known and respected educator in the Anchorage School District. Please help me welcome Robert Boyd.
Senator Lincoln.
Brief at ease, please.
Senate will stand at ease, please. Will the Senate please come back to order? We're under introduction of guests. Senator Lincoln. Senator Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'd like to welcome a guest that I have in the Ziegler Gallery, Mary Armentrout, who is an elementary teacher in Cordova at the Mount Eccles School. She's also here representing the Alaska Science Technology Foundation. And please help me welcome her in the Ziegler Gallery.
Senator Sharp.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the Ziegler Gallery, there's two teachers down from Fairbanks. Both have project award winners from the Alaska Science and Technology Foundation. I'd like to introduce Gary Bender and Ron Reel. Help me welcome them.
Further guests for introduction? That brings us to messages from the governor.
There are no messages this morning, Mr. President.
Messages from the House.
Message dated April 24th, the House has passed and they are returned. CS for Senate Joint Resolution Number 25, CRA amended, urging the federal government to recognize the dire water and sanitation conditions in rural Alaska. CS for Senate Bill 85, Finance amended, Tourism Marketing Council. Senate Bill Number 86, Funds Transfer under the Uniform Commercial Code. CS for Senate Bill 112, Jude, relating to the Uniform Commercial Code. These bills have been referred for enrollment. Message dated April 24th, the House has passed, transmitted for consideration. House Concurrent Resolution Number 18 by Representatives Phillips, Barnes, and Menard relating to the sale of state royalty gas.
Oil and gas and judiciary.
CS House Joint Resolution Number 36, Hess, by the House Health, Education, and Social Services Committee, urging the Federal Department of Health and Human Services to repeal the 100-hour rule relating to employment of certain persons receiving AFDC and to replace it with the regulation that will serve as an incentive for the AFDC recipients to accept employment of more than 100 hours a month.
Hess, Judiciary and Finance.
House Joint Resolution Number 37 by Representatives Hoffman, McLean, Foster, Oberg, Williams, Davidson, Napolia, Mackey, Ulmer, Brown, Carney, Bryce, Menard, Sanders, Willis, G. Davis, B. Davis, Davies, Toohey, and Phillips, urging the Congress to enact H.R. 1033 or similar legislation authorizing construction grants for publicly owned treatment works in economically distressed rural communities.
CNRA and Hess.
CS for House Bill 81, Finance, amended by the House Finance Committee, an act related to the Longevity Bonus Program.
Rules.
Those are all the messages in the House this afternoon.
That brings us to communications.
There are no communications.
Reports to standing committees.
Finance Committee considered Senate Bill Number 99 relating to the improvement of state finances. Majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with CS and due pass. Report was signed by Senators Frank and Pierce, co-chairs, concurring Senators Rieger, Jacko, and Sharp. Senators Cortula and Kelly saw no recommendation. Letter of intent attached, 7-0 fiscal notes and 10 fiscal notes. Senate Bill Number 99 has no further referral.
Rules.
Community and Regional Affairs Committee considered Senate Bill 164, Municipal Incorporation, recommends it be replaced with CS and reports it back as follows. Senator Phillips, Chair, and Senator Lehman signed due pass. Senator Jaroff and Adams signed no recommendation, 0 fiscal note attached. Senate Bill 164 has a further referral to the Judiciary Committee. Finance Committee considered House Joint Resolution Number 11, proposing an amendment to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to repeal of regulations by the legislature. Majority of the committee recommends due pass. Report was signed by Senators Frank and Pierce, co-chairs, concurring Senators Kelly, Jacko, Rieger, Cortula, and Sharp. Previous House 0 fiscal note, House fiscal note attached. House Joint Resolution Number 11 has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CSHB 66 Finance amended, exemption from and deferral of municipal property taxes for certain primary residences. Recommends it be applied to Senate CS and majority do pass. Report was signed by Senators Frank and Pierce, co-chairs, concurring Senators Rieger and Sharp. Senator Kelly signed do pass as amended. Senator Cortula signed do not pass. 4-0 fiscal notes attached and 2 fiscal notes. CS for House Bill 66 Finance amended has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill 102 Finance, Alaska Labor Relations Agency, recommends it be replaced with the Labor and Commerce Senate CS and majority do pass. Report was signed by Senators Frank and Pierce, co-chairs, concurring Senators Rieger, Jacko, Kelly, and Sharp. Senator Cortula signed no recommendation. Previous 0 House fiscal note. CS for House Bill 102 Finance has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered CS for House Bill 151 Finance, payment by indigents for court costs. The majority of the committee recommends due pass. Report was signed by Senators Frank and Pierce, co-chairs, concurring Senators Kelly, Jacko, and Sharp. Senators Rieger and Cortula signed no recommendation. 3-0 fiscal notes and a fiscal note attached. CS for House Bill 151 Finance has no further referral.
Rules.
Finance Committee considered House Bill Number 178, Medicaid for Certain Children. Majority of the committee recommends it be replaced with the Hess Senate CS and due pass. Report was signed by Senators Frank and Pierce, co-chairs, concurring Senators Kelly, Jacko, Rieger, and Sharp. 6 previous House fiscal notes attached. House Bill Number 178 has no further referral.
Senator Taylor, would you move that we
recess.
Stand in recess for a Rules Committee meeting. And Senator Jacko, would you announce a Rules Committee meeting on recess?
Thank you, Mr. President. There will be a Rules Committee meeting during the recess. Grand Camp Room.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Taylor?
Move we stand in recess for a Rules Committee meeting.
Senate will stand in recess, hopefully, for just 10 minutes. Will the Senate please come back to order? We're under reports of standing committees.
Could we revert to introduction of guests?
Without objection, we're under introduction of guests.
Mr. President? Is it your intent to come back to our place on the calendar after introduction of guests?
Yes, it is. I don't think we have anything. We're on reports of standing committees, and we have other reports of standing committees.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President. I just wanted to introduce a constituent, a friend of mine, Wally Carlo, down from Fairbanks. Please help me welcome him.
Under reports of standing committees.
Rules Committee considered Senate Bill 186, State Agency Publication, recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Jackal, concurring Senators Hofford, Rieger, and Little. This bill appears on today's calendar. Rules Committee considered House Current Resolution Number 41, Individual Fishery Quota Share Blocks, House Bill 112, Limited Partnerships, CS for House Bill 152, Jude, Magistrate Jurisdiction, recommends calendar. Reports were signed by Senator Jacko, Chair, concurring Senators Rieger and Halford. Senator Little signed no recommendation. This resolution and bill is due here on today's calendar. Rules Committee considered CS for House Bill 66, Finance Amended, exemption from and deferral of municipal property taxes, recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Jacko, Chair, concurring Senators Rieger and Halford. Senator Little signed do not pass. This bill appears on today's calendar. And those are all the standing committee reports today.
Reports of special committees.
There are no special committee reports.
The introduction of Senate resolutions.
There are no resolutions.
The introduction of Senate bills.
There are no Senate bills today.
That brings us to consideration of the daily calendar.
Senate Bill Number 186 by Senator Frank, an act relating to state agency publications. State Affairs Committee considered the bill. Majority of the committee recommends do pass. Report was signed by Senator Lehman, Chair, concurring Senators Taylor and Miller. Rules Committee considered the bill recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Jacko, Chair, concurring Senators Hofford, Rieger, and Little. I have no amendments. Excuse me, I do have an amendment. Amendment number one by Senator Taylor, page 2, line 15, and it has been distributed.
Thank you. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent. There being objection, let me briefly explain that. If you look on the second page at line 15, the full body of the sentence reads, in this section, cost for each copy means the figure that results after dividing the total contract cost of producing the publication by the number of copies produced. This is a friendly amendment co-sponsored by the sponsor of the legislation. The intent is to modify the sentence by withdrawing the word contract, thus ending up with a sentence that would require, or a formula that would require, that the total cost of production would be divided by the number of copies. It was felt that the word contract might imply just the cost of publishing.
Is there further objection to the adoption of Amendment Number 1? Without objection, Amendment Number 1 is adopted. Are there further amendments?
Amendment number 2 is being copied.
Senate will stand at ease while amendment number 2 is copied. Senate, please come back to order. I believe we have the amendment copied before us. Would the Secretary please read the next amendment?
Amendment number 2 by Senator Adams. Page 2, following line 18, it's been distributed.
Senator Adams.
Thank you. I move amendment number 2. Mr. President.
Senator Adams.
Thank you. A problem occurs where there is no amendment to the definition that applies to all statutes in this legislation. First of all, the definition contains the university as an agency subject to these exemptions and the commissioner standards while the new Section 1 exempts them, and I think this is contradicting. Second, under the old, and with this bill, it repeals a statute and rewrites Alaska Statute 4420. The court system administrator had the authority to make determinations regarding the production of publications, and the legislative council did it for the legislature. When this particular statute was rewritten in this bill, it gave the authority to establish the standards to the Commissioner of Administration for any state agency, including those that fall under the definition. Under the section's definition statute 4499-240, the court system and the legislature falls under the definition under state agency, and I don't know if we wanted to do that. I think this constitutes a violation of the separation of powers in that the Commissioner of Administration should not be establishing standards of any kind for separate branches of government. This is true for the legislature, specifically noted in the definition, the leadership of the legislature, as well as the courts. Who is in here to say what relationship will be between the Commissioner and the administration and the legislature 2 years from now? Another example of how this could be a problem is under the definition section, the commissioner will be establishing standards for the ombudsman program. What if the Department of Administration was being investigated by the ombudsman, or any state agency for that matter, and the commissioner established a standard that the reports had to be released first to the Commissioner of Administration? This amendment deletes Alaska Statute 4499-240 under the definition that refers to publication and BNC subsections that would apply them to the legislature and ombudsman and courts. And then I've also placed the Alaska Railroad under this particular amendment, but I had one that deleted them and I didn't know what the body wanted to do. But I don't know if this body wanted to put the legislature and the court system under one state agency. And I ask people to either debate this, vote it up or down, but I think it's a good amendment.
Senator Curtula.
I don't know the context of the correctness of the amendment. I'm going to presume it to be precisely what the introducee said, due source it. And so I find that as the Department Administration has taken over more activist functions, is no longer a neutral agency. And in fact, quite the opposite. And I think it will behoove us to, at this stage, start separating ourselves from policy, administrative policy, that is implemented by the Department Administration. It may cost more now, but it's going to cost less later. Quite frankly, I discussed briefly with Commissioner Administration the problem of the health insurance, where as one of the conditions of negotiation, often the salaries go up and the health insurance program is reduced, where the legislature is tied in automatically with no increase in salaries but continuously losing benefits. That may be fine, but I'd just soon have some decision into that process. The only comment was, well, then just take us out of it. And I was very pleasant about it and was not being pushy. I just asked, you know, how do we get into at least making a comment during the period of negotiations? Frankly, we've put so many things our administration that they're no longer just bookkeepers, which they had been for all of government. They're now activists in support of many programs or in reduction or increasing many programs. And I think it's time that we made a separation. I think it's a very good move and a very good idea. And I think it's symbolic more than anything else. It's just time to separate us as was constitutionally intended and as the judiciary was constitutionally intended from this administration or any administration. They have a separate goal, and if you don't think they're activists, you try this one. And if you don't think it'll get worse, just hold with us. Just, I think we ought to do it.
Senator Pierce?
The prime sponsor had to leave the room. Can we have an at ease, please?
Senator will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? Is there objection to the adoption of Amendment Number 2? Without objection, Amendment Number 2 is adopted. Does the Secretary have further amendments?
Amendment Number 3 by Senator Donnelly, page 2, line 13, and it's been distributed.
Senator Donnelly.
I'd move Amendment Number 3 and ask unanimous consent.
Amendment Number 3 has been moved. Is there objection? Senator Donnelly.
Mr. President, I had the opportunity to actually see one of these disclaimers, one of these annual things somebody published, and there was showed up on the back page, and this is one they didn't even bother to do it in, and there was a whole empty back page, and right here in the middle was the smallest little dinky disclaimer you ever seen in your life, and I don't need glasses to read, but I found myself holding up here because I was trying to figure out what it was, and then I finally figured out, well, this is the disclaimer, and I just assumed that they had just printed it as small as they possibly could get away with. And so that the standard in this is 8 points, that's pretty darn small, I guess, or else, you know, they're even going smaller than that. And I just thought if I got to hold it here to read when I got pretty decent eyes, it ought to be a little bit bigger than that.
Is there objection to the adoption of Amendment Number 3? There is objection to the adoption of Amendment Number 3. Any further debate? Question before the Senate is, shall Amendment Number 3 be adopted? Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so Amendment Number 3 has failed by a vote of 10 to 10. Would the Secretary please read the next amendment?
I have no further amendments.
There are no further amendments, Senator Taylor.
I move and ask unanimous consent Senate Bill 186, amended, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
There is objection. The question before the Senate is, shall Senate Bill 183, amended, be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage, 186. If there's no debate, members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so, Senate Bill 186, amended, has failed to advance from second to third reading on the same legislative day and will be on tomorrow's calendar. Will the Secretary please read the next item on the calendar?
CS for House Bill Number 66, Finance Amendment by the Finance Committee, an act relating to an exemption from and deferral of municipal property taxes for certain primary residences to property tax equivalency payments for certain residents to the determination of full and true value of taxable property in a municipality and providing for an effective date. Finance Committee considers the bill, recommends a CS, a majority to pass. Report was signed by Senators Pearson, Frank, co-chairs, concurring, Senators Rieger and Sharp, Senator Kelly signed as amended. Senator Curtula signed, do not pass. Fiscal notes, zero fiscal notes. Rules Committee considers the bill, recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Jack, co-chair, concurring, Senators Rieger and Halford, Senator Little signed, do not pass. I have a finance, there is a finance Senate CS.
Senator Pierce.
Mr. President, it's my intention to place a motion to adopt the finance CS and then amend that motion. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate adopt CSHB 66 finance in lieu of the original bill.
There is objection.
Mr. President, I would move
Senator
the
Pierce.
Title amendment that is on each person's desk.
Point of order.
Senator Duncan.
I'm not sure this is proper. It seems to me that you have to adopt the Finance Committee substitute before offering the amendment to the title. Maybe I'm wrong, but it seems to me that if you're going to amend the title, you first have to have the document adopted.
Senator Duncan, I talked to legal to try and get, you know, what the best way to do this is, and it is proper to amend the amendment. The CS is an amendment, so it can be amended. If we adopt the finance CS without amending it, we're essentially adopting a CS with a title change without a resolution. And that is by the other rules. So certainly questionable. If we go ahead and deal with the amendment to the amendment first, i.e. the title change, if that changes it back to the House title, then the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute is clearly in order. And that was the process I went through with legal.
Yeah, that's fine. But maybe I could ask why was the title changed to begin with? And is there something in the bill we can't do when you change the title back?
Senator Pierce.
Senator, we had the companion bill in Senate Finance. When we were hearing the companion bill, a member of the Finance Committee moved a title amendment. When the House bill came over and we adopted the Senate language into the House version, we neglected to realize that we had also done a title amendment. So when they printed it up, it had our title amendment. The House title fits the language that is in the CS. So we are going back to the House title as it came across. So I have moved the title amendment.
Is there further? Senator Duncan, go ahead.
Just to be sure that the adoption of the title amendment doesn't remove my objection to the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute.
Okay.
Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
The question before the Senate is, shall the amendment to the Finance Committee substitute before its adoption be approved? Are there objections to the title amendment? Without objection, the title amendment is passed, and that brings the main motion, the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute, back before us. Senator Duncan.
I just wanted the Finance Committee co-chair to explain what the Finance Committee substitute does that is different than what the House did.
Senator Frank.
Two things. Whereas the House eliminated the senior citizens and disabled veterans tax exemption, the Senate Finance Committee merely allows the municipality by ordinance to opt out of the senior citizens tax exemption. A municipality may not opt out of the disabled veterans tax exemption. It may, by ordinance, opt out of the senior citizens portion. That is the primary difference between the two versions.
Senator Duncan.
My understanding, then, is that the House bill just repeals the program, and municipalities then have to decide on their own to offer the program if they want to continue it. Under the Senate version, program would continue on the local level unless the municipality, by ordinance, opts out of the program or changes it somehow. Is that my understanding?
That's correct. You'd see on page 3, line 28, the words, unless the municipality, by ordinance, rejects this exemption. That's what I would consider the opt-out clause for the senior citizens.
Question before the Senate is the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute. Senator Little.
Well, Mr. President, I really feel that we just got this information at very not too long ago here, and it makes sense to me, since this was just read across in rules and transmitted here, that if this is adopted, we need to. I think the public deserves to have this bill held in second reading again, since it was just brought to the floor moments before we're discussing it now. I would only make that recommendation to you if this substitute is adopted.
Question before the Senate is the adoption of the Finance Committee. Senator Salo.
Well,
to the adoption of the Finance Committee substitute.
No, let's let this happen.
Senator Curtula.
Substitute is infinitely better than the original, but I wouldn't support either of them. I don't think either one were something that we need to do or should do. But if you have to make a choice up to now, adopt the finance substitute, I'd say I don't support either, but I would do that.
The question before the Senate is, shall the Finance Committee substitute as amended be adopted in lieu of the original bill. Is there further objection? Without further objection, the Finance Committee substitute as amended is adopted in lieu of the original bill. Madam Secretary.
Senate CS for House Bill 66 Finance by the Finance Committee, an act relating to an exemption from and deferral of municipal property taxes for certain primary residences to property tax equivalency payments for certain residents to the determination of full and true value of taxable property in a municipality and providing for an effective date. I have amendment number one by Senator Salo and Curtula, and it's as corrected. It's page 2, line 25, and it's been distributed.
Senator Salo.
Thank you, Mr. President. Before I move this amendment, I would like to also ask that this bill be held in second reading for tomorrow, and the reason is that I have several additional amendments, but they were written presuming that the title of the bill was one thing, and they are going to be need to be altered somewhat since the title of the bill is now different. And so I'm asking for a ruling from the chair on whether or not this bill can be held in second reading until tomorrow.
Mr. President.
Senator Duncan.
I would move that Senate Committee substitute for House Bill 66 Finance be held in second reading until tomorrow's calendar.
Yes.
Senator Curtula.
I don't know any reason why I couldn't go to third subsequent to proper addressing these amendments. I do know that because I happen to hand carry a number of amendments being on the fifth floor. They were handed to me from Senator Salo's office by the time we got to second floor, and I did hand carry them into that caucus. I said, I think there's going to be a change in the title. That means all these things have to be changed. And there were a series. And that was the truth. That's a fact. So it seems to me it, the seriousness of this legislation seems to me would suggest that the options be there, at least for these amendments. They all seem to be as important and as serious as the one you do have before you.
The Senate will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order?
Mr. President.
Senator Taylor.
Thank you. I would move and ask unanimous consent. Senate Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute, House Bill 66, Finance Title Amended, be moved to the bottom of today's calendar.
Thank you. And I don't believe that it now says title amended in the bill because the title has been amended back so that the citation no longer will be title amended as it relates to the House bill. Yeah. Okay. Without objection, title amended and unamended. Without objection, Senate Committee Substitute, Committee Substitute, House Bill 66, Finance, title amended and unamended, will be held at the bottom of the calendar. Okay. House Bill 67 is not before us because it didn't come pending referral. So, Madam Secretary, would you read the next item?
House Bill Number 112 by Representative Moses, an act relating to limited partnership and providing for an effective date. Judiciary Committee considered the bill. Majority of the committee recommends to pass. Report was signed by Senator Taylor, Chair, concurring Senators Halford and Jackal. Senator Little signed no recommendation. Rules Committee considered the bill, recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Jackal, Chair, concurring Senators Rieger and Halford. Senator Little signed no recommendation. I have no amendments.
Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent. House Bill 112 be considered engrossed. Advanced to third reading, placed on final passage.
Is there objection to the advancement of House Bill 112? Without objection, House Bill 112 will be considered engrossed. Oh, there is objection. Okay. Senator Donnelly.
Yeah, thank you. My understanding on this bill is it just reflects conforming the Alaska statutes to the nationally adopted Uniform Limited Partnership Act, or maybe the Judiciary Chair can correct me if that's wrong, but it's my, from reading the backup from the Attorney General, this is just consistent with the Uniform Act.
Thank Senator
you.
Taylor.
Yes, thank you, Senator. Senator from downtown was there on the Judiciary Committee, I believe, with me when we heard this bill. There was no opposition offered to it, and his comments are absolutely correct. It's a uniform statute, one that we're just bringing the state of Alaska into compliance with.
The question, Senator Curtula.
And it's an old friend. It's been around for quite a little while. This isn't my first time.
The question before the Senate is, shall House Bill 112 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed in final passage? Is there further objection? Without, Senator Duncan. Senate will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? Is there further objection to the advancement of House Bill 112? Without objection, House Bill 112 will be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage. Is there debate in third reading?
House Bill number 112, enacting and limited partnerships and providing for an effective date.
If there is no debate, the question before the Senate is, shall House Bill 112 pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so House Bill 112 has passed the Senate by a vote of 19 yeas to 0 nays. Can you have the effective date?
Oh, I was gonna, after the effective
Senator
date.
Taylor, would you move the effective date, please?
Sorry. Moving after Taylor. Unanimous consent, the vote on passage of the bill be considered the vote on the effective date clause.
I just wanted to call the Senate. I want to be sure we're all 20 here and one happy family.
There is a call on the motion to consider the roll call on final passage to be the roll call on the effective date clause. The Senate will stand at ease. Will Senate please come back to order? The motion before the Senate is to consider the roll call and final passage of House Bill 112, the roll call and the effective date clause. Is there objection? Without objection, the roll call and final passage of House Bill 112 will be considered the roll call and the effective date clause. Will the Secretary please read the next item on the calendar? And Senator Duncan, was your call on the calendar, on the bill, on the day, or... Thank you, Senator Duncan.
Excuse me, I'm sorry. CS for House Bill 152 Jude by the House Judiciary Committee, an act related to magistrate jurisdiction. Judiciary Committee considered the bill. Majority of the committee recommends to pass. Report was signed by Senator Taylor, Chair, concurring Senators Halford, Little, and Donnelly. Rules Committee considered the bill, recommends calendar. Report was signed by Senator Jackal, Chair, concurring Senators Rieger and Halford. Senator Little signed no recommendation. There are no amendments.
There are no amendments. Senator Taylor.
Thank you. Move and ask unanimous consent. Committee substitute House Bill 152 Judiciary be considered engrossed, advanced third reading, and placed on final passage.
Is there objection to the advancement of committee substitute to House Bill 152? Without objection, committee substitute House Bill 152 will be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage. Is there debate?
CS for House Bill 152, Jude, and act relating to magistrate jurisdiction.
If there is no debate in third reading, the question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute House Bill 152 Judiciary pass the Senate? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the Secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute House Bill 152 Judiciary has passed the Senate by a vote of 20 yeas to 0 nays. Will the Secretary please read the next item on the calendar?
CS for House Bill number 88, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act related to grants to municipalities, named recipients, and unincorporated communities, establishing capital project matching grant programs for municipalities and unincorporated communities, establishing local share requirement for capital project grants to municipalities, named recipients, and unincorporated communities, and providing for an effective date. Number six.
Are there amendments? Oh, wait, we're already in third. Excuse me. Senator Adams.
Just, I move that we go down from third to second for a purpose of specific amendment. That amendment is being Xeroxed.
Senator, please stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order while that amendment is being offered or being drafted? Senator Adams.
Yes, I'm going to remove that since that amendment is not before us yet, and I'm going to try.
The previous motion is withdrawn without objection. Senator Adams.
I move that we return to second reading for the purpose of rescinding our action and failing to adopt. adopt amendment number one.
The motion is to return to second reading for purposes of rescinding action on amendment number one. Senator Adams.
Thank you, Mr. President. Amendment number one that I tried to change the effective date on this piece of legislation till January 1st. My reason behind it, because nobody can explain the formula that is set up here in the local shares requirement, which is on page number one. Nobody in here can explain that formula to us. The reason is a couple things in this formula is missing. The true and full determination has not been set. If there is any of you in this room that knows how to explain this formula, then you are too smart. You don't belong in this body. You don't belong in this body. You belong as a fortune teller in Coney Island, or that, or perhaps you need to be a banker in Bahamas, and you're beyond us in here. And that's the reason I need you to go back so we can rescind our action, because we cannot interpret the formula that has been placed before us. And I ask you to support this rescinding motion, Mr. President.
Senator Gertula.
We have several on the third floor right now that could do just perform that well.
Somehow I think we're probably not in order. However, the question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance be returned to second reading for purposes of rescinding action on amendment number one? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance has not been returned to second reading for purposes of rescinding action on amendment number one. By a vote of 9 yeas to 11 nays, Senator Adams.
Mr. President, I move that we return to second reading for the purpose of rescinding our action and failing to adopt number two. And that's for unanimous consent.
There is objection. Senator Adams.
Number two, as I explained it the other day, would allow communities within a borough to pool their resources. And I use an example like the Northwest Arctic borough that I come to. The 11 communities would be able to pool their resources to perhaps build a school project. And that's the language I needed to allow this to happen. And I ask for the rescinding motion.
Question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance be returned to second reading for purpose of rescinding action on amendment number two? Senator Donnelly.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I remember this when it was brought up yesterday, but I don't remember any argument against it. And I was wondering, is there any reason not to allow this pooling?
The question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance be returned to second reading for purposes of rescinding action on amendment number two? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so, committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance has not been returned to second reading for purposes of rescinding action on amendment number two by a vote of 9 yeas to 11 nays. Senator Adams.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the purpose of rescinding our action and failing to adopt amendment number three. No objections?
Is there no objection? There is objection, Senator Adams.
We all recall this particular amendment. It's the one that deletes all references to the existing grant programs we have in all our municipalities. And I don't believe that we should mess up what we presently have in our existing grant programs in our communities. You don't want us to step in with a formula that we cannot understand. And I think I'm asking you to rescind this. It's one that is needed, because we're going to have to next year come back and rewrite these statutes. So I'm asking you to rescind at this time.
Question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance be returned to second reading for purposes of rescinding action on amendment number 3. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance has not been returned to second reading for rescinding action on amendment number 3. Senator Adams.
Mr. President, I move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the purpose of amendment number 6. This is before you on your desk.
The motion before the Senate is shall committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance be returned to second reading for purposes of adopting amendment number 6.
Just a
Senator Adams.
Thank you, Mr. President. Just a technical amendment. It puts the minimum grant amount at $50,000 if there is at least $65,300,000 is appropriated to the fund. This was the amount that the governor had requested. If it's the lesser of the amount that is placed in this fund, then it will be reduced on a pro rata basis down to $25,000 on a minimum. Simple amendment.
The question before the Senate is shall committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance be returned to second reading for the purpose of specific amendment number 6. Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance has not been returned to second reading for consideration of specific amendment number 6. Senator Lincoln, do you have an amendment to this one that you want to wish?
Yes.
Senator Lincoln.
Mr. President, I ask to move back to second for purposes of an amendment, and that being amendment number 7, which is also on the senator's desks.
Okay, the motion is to return to second reading for purposes of amendment number 7. There is objection. Senator Lincoln, speaking to your amendment.
Thank you. This amendment, Mr. President, let me grab the bill here, is more of a housekeeping amendment. If you would note on page 4, line 16, it reads, if there is no incorporated entity qualified, and the amendment would change that to then read, in the absence of a governing body or other qualified entity. This amendment on what could be, as it reads now, this could be interpreted to mean that the grant could not be awarded to an unincorporated community that does not have a qualified incorporated entity to receive the grant. This could mean communities like Chalkeetsik, Klukwan, Tuntutuliak, Arctic Village, and other like communities that are governed by village councils. I don't believe it was the intent of the governor to delete communities from within this bill. My amendment would make it quite clear that under AS 3705-317A, grants to unincorporated communities would be administered by the governing body, where there is a governing body, or by a qualified incorporated entity, or that if either of those two entities do not exist, then no grant award would be present, would be presented. The present A3 is not clear as worded in the bill. In checking with Department of Community and Regional Affairs, the Grants Administration section thought the amended language that I offer here today clarifies what this bill sets out to do. This amendment has also been discussed with OMB, and they have no problem since it does clarify the statute. And I believe that we should clean this up before it goes over to the other body. As I said, it is more of a technical amendment, but one that when communities go in to get their grants, that they could be denied just for the very unclear language that is placed here on page 4, line 16. I urge that we go back to second reading.
Question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance be returned to second reading for purposes of considering amendment number 7? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so, committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance has not been returned to second reading for purposes of considering amendment number 7 by a vote of 9 yeas to 11 nays. That brings the bill back before us in third reading on final passage. Senator Donald.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I'd think a lot more of this legislation if we had adopted some of the amendments the minorities proposed here. Especially the one that would address the percentage, I think, for the larger communities. I don't think this is really a fair proposal to the citizens of larger communities of the state. Once again, they're being asked to share an even greater burden of the cost of government proportionate to other parts of the state. And I also think it's a certainly, although it adopts this formula, it's certainly not binding on future legislatures. I mean, they can certainly do whatever they want in the future. They don't have to necessarily even follow this. So while it may be what the third floor wants, it seems to me to be so much window dressing, really, and adopting another sort of program formula that a future legislature could just choose to ignore, essentially, through another through a budget bill, which would countermand this because it would be specific on the subject. But I do think it puts people in the urban areas at a tremendous disadvantage in the percentage they're going to be required. And I know a lot of folks from rural Alaska feel it's unfair because of the contribution requirement that they might not be able to have the infrastructure or the governmental structure to come up with. So all in all, I don't think it's a very good idea for that bias that appears in the legislation, and also because of the, I think, the separation of powers questions that it presents also, in that the legislature is tying its own hands to address problems as they may evolve. Who knows, there may be a capital project in some area of Alaska that rises to such a high need that the legislature may determine that they want to appropriately fund it, and this would say, no, you can't do it, you got to go through this matching thing. And that doesn't make a lot of sense. It ought to be the best public policy at the particular time, and if there was a particular capital need, the legislature would be able to do that. And in fact, they will still be able to do that, but it would be in defiance of this particular proposal.
Senator Dunn.
Thank you, Mr. President. I've also got some serious concerns about this legislation. In fact, the last page has really got me kind of dumbfounded here, page 14, implementation of the program, and especially subsection C, I mean subsection C specifically. I guess I don't understand how this thing all works and what it means as you read this through. It says the Office of Management Budget shall select projects to be funded with money allocated to individual grant accounts from an appropriation that takes effect during fiscal year 94. Selections shall be made from a list of proposed projects submitted by the grantee in writing and signed by each legislator representing the area in which the projects will be constructed. I've never seen anything like this before. I guess that means that we as individual legislators sit down with, I don't know who we sit down with, and agree that these are the projects that we're going to, that we are going to sign for, and therefore they're okay. But how, what happens if somebody doesn't want to sign? I mean, can you, if the legislator says, hey, I don't agree with that project, I'm not going to sign, can it be funded anyway? What happens if you have a project that goes across a couple of legislative boundaries, district boundaries? Does this mean that every, when it says area, does this mean that every Anchorage area legislator has to sign for these projects? Or does it mean you just sign for the projects that are in your district? And I think it's quite possible that certain projects may go across legislative boundaries. I guess what I'm saying is I don't understand how this thing works. I don't know who proposed this method.
I guess I don't think it works. And I'm not sure what we're doing. We're really tying our hands here and really turning over the power of appropriation in some sense to someone other than the legislative body. Maybe the Senate Finance Co-Chair or whoever put together this provision of how it's going to be implemented could explain how exactly they foresee that working and what happens if certain legislators can't agree and one signs and one doesn't.
Senator Frank.
Mr. President, the department, or excuse me, the OMB suggested this language. I would acknowledge that it has certain, raises certain questions that have been raised by the minority leader. I think ultimately that the power of the appropriation is with the legislature and the power carry out those appropriations is with the executive, and that the executive probably has the ultimate power to listen to those representatives and senators from the district from which the request has come, and probably the power to reject that advice and consent. It is a transitional provision that's designed to allow the bill to operate in this first year of operation as much as we can, like it will work next year and the year after and subsequent years. So I think we recognize some of the potential problem with it, but I think ultimately the OMB will have the final say, but it will give an opportunity for our senators and representatives. We'll give them input into the process and kind of informal approval.
Will the Senate please stand at ease? Will the Senate please come back to order? We are in debate on final passage of committee substitute Senate Bill 88, Finance. Senator Duncan, you seeking the floor?
Mr. President, I just wanted to make one more statement about my concern about how this is going to be implemented and handled, even on a short-term or an interim basis. Here's what I can see potentially happening. So I sit down with my local governing body, I guess, and they come up with a list of 30 projects, and I sign it, and the two House members sign it, and we've got our list of 30 projects. But we really then turn everything over to OMB. This is not even, I mean, this is to OMB. They make the final decision of what the local priority is in my area. They say, okay, of those 30, the first 15 on the list, we don't think those are important. We want to take number 28. I'm not sure that makes good sense. Seems to me we should be involved. If we really want to be sure that the local projects, the priorities are funded, we should be involved in the end where the OMB is making the final decision, not with the initial list. Before we're putting the initial list together, we then lose complete control. I don't know why I believe that the guy across the street knows more about this community than I know. I know he said he does, but everything I've seen so far indicates to me he knows very little about it. And why should I turn this over to him to make the final decision somewhere along the line? And that's really what we're doing here. We're saying put together a list of 30 projects from my community, every legislator sign with the municipality saying those are important, and then we, setting up on the third floor, or whatever floor he sits on across the street here, will make the decision about which project is really in your best interest. That's just not right.
Senator Curtula.
Another case of new kid up here with a master's degree in urban North Yakutat will be making the decisions without sufficient knowledge. But the reason that I've opposed the legislation is just somewhat the reverse of some of the thinking here. The urban areas have the sophistication, the numbers, and the size. They also get a significant funding, so they can do something. They can create a major project that has primacy in their district, hopefully. And to that extent, you know, there is some value to the idea. You want something, you put up some. You don't want it, well, you don't get it because you haven't put up anything. But
And that may give you the control against OMB. If they don't put in your key projects, you just withdraw your 30% or whatever. I don't know. I don't know how that would work. The thing that bothers me and always has bothered me is for major capital projects and even modest capital projects that cost quite as much in rural Alaska, usually a great deal more than does in urban Alaska. Let's just call the rail belt, road system, key harbor ports, communities, urban. And frankly, $25,000 or $50,000 doesn't build you a bridge across Brown Slough and Bethel. But the allocation may well build you a bridge in my district or in the Anchorage area across an equal body of water if that's what the urban area wants. I don't think there's a fairness based on geography, cost of doing business, and this particular project program, which then requires us yet not only to accept this $60 or $70 million, but yet to have, for certain, a capital project program, much the way we have it now. Much the way we have it now. Further, in the rural areas, who is the authorizing and appropriating agent? Even in a second-class borough, let alone a rural, it's the legislature. Unless the second-class borough is voted to take over a certain power, we are the authorizing appropriating agent. I've told my borough assembly that more than once while working over programs. I said, hold it a minute. You want to vote in the powers, fine, but until you do, I have input here. Rural Alaska, they are legislators. It's kind of an unofficial, never established borough assembly. That's what we are in this case, even though the individual members are the authorizing appropriating group. That then further gets into conflict with decision making. I just don't think this is an improvement on the system. I think it's the beginning of an idea. But it isn't the beginning of an idea that's going to set aside that which bothers many an executive and many other people too, and that is the legislative process of providing for capital projects. We're going to have to do them in order to get anything done out in the bush of any substance, whether we pass this bill or not, that's what I'm saying. That's the reason that I don't care for the legislation. It's not that there isn't some seeds of a good idea if we could put it into practice and put more work into it.
Senator Lincoln.
Thank you, Mr. President. I'm going to be opposing the legislation for several reasons, one of which is that some of the amendments that I think should have been taken care of in this body were not, and we're assuming that it might be taken care of on the other body, but we know what assume means. As I understand this legislation that's before us, it was to accomplish basically two things. One was to encourage a sense of local ownership in the capital projects by requiring a financial participation locally, and secondly, to leverage the use of the state funding in financing capital projects. While these are laudable objectives, why establish a complex program with a formula nobody completely understands? We know that with the funding of this capital project match grant program, the discretionary legislative grants for capital projects will most likely not have the money we have available today. It's difficult to see how this program can be equitable to communities with a small population. The program is population-based. Even with a minimum set for each community, we have seen with revenue sharing and municipal assistance that in years where there is not enough funding, the money is prorated. The base amount per community would be so low for the rural areas that no project would ever be funded. By establishing a specific program like this that requires documented steps along the way, we're just setting up again more hoops for our communities to jump through. On page 5, lines 3 and 7, it includes language for the administration department to adopt regulations providing for the periodic audits of the use of money for grants administered by the department, including audit of the department's determination of the value of and adequacy of the verification of the actual use of locally funded or contributed labor. What is the administrating department going to, how is the administration department going to determine the value of the locally funded or contributed labor? On what basis will the value of labor be determined? Union wages? How does the administering department plan to go to verify this? Community by community? Project by project? Additionally, who pays for these periodic audits? The communities who are now required to contribute to the cost of the project? Are we adding to their financial burden? If the administering department pays for the periodic audits, I don't see it reflected in the fiscal notes. The administering department is also to determine the value of contribution of land, materials, and equipment used as local match. In rural Alaska, we're talking about over 200 small communities. The fiscal note submitted by DCRA provides for $103,000 in additional funds. Fiscal note submitted by DOA in the amount of $259,700 to cover the addition of four permanent full-time positions to be added to the one existing grant administrator. How many positions are going to be covered with $103,000? In reviewing the bill, by October 1, each community is to submit their priority list to the governor. It is my understanding that with each priority, the match must be included. At what point will the administering department value the labor, land, equipment, materials applied for that local match? Will they do this via telephone? Will a community lose out on funding because they are waiting in line for the valuation of their contribution? How is land valued? Fair market value? How would this be determined in rural areas where land transactions are few? Would this lead to an undervaluing of the land contribution from communities to unorganized boroughs? The fiscal notes submitted by DCRA include travel in the amount of $5,000 for the local government assistance office statewide and $2,000 for the grants administration section. Knowing the cost of traveling in rural Alaska, this small amount of travel funding is not going to go very far. I think you will find in the fiscal note number two very interesting. DCRA's original fiscal note for the local government assistance BRU included $108,000 for personal services and $27,000 for travel. This was to provide for a new staff position for the unincorporated communities and smaller municipalities. This would have enabled that position to assist 8 to 12 communities to prepare the community development strategies and capital project plans. About 10 to 15% of the communities who don't have staff to do these. What about the other 85 to 95% of the communities who do not have staff? How and who will give them assistance? If you consider the latest fiscal note from local government assistance and DCRA, you'll note there's a total of $10,000 in fiscal note with a $5,000 for travel and $5,000 for contractual. Given the need in our fiscal notes, how will the job get done with $10,000 in travel statewide? I'm concerned we're basing this program on population more than on community need. Even with a minimum amount built in for a grant under this program, the smaller, less populated communities will be underfunded. Alaska has always had a problem with federal programs because population is used as a basis in appropriating money for our programs. Apparently, we have not learned anything because the state of Alaska is turning around and doing the same thing to rural communities. In going through the process just this past week in allocating $2 million in capital funds to over 75 communities in one house district, I know what it's like to not have enough money to take care of capital projects. We have to move cautiously. And I don't believe that this body is moving cautiously in moving this bill out without these corrections, without these amendments. I think that we're trying to get a bill through the hopper to get out of here, and I don't think that's appropriate for our communities.
Question before the Senate is final passage of committee substitute Senate Bill 88. Members may proceed to vote.
Mr. President.
Senator Donovan.
Thank you. Mr. President, thanks for the additional opportunity here. I'd just like to kind of sum up where we're at on the debate on this issue. I mean, first of all, we've seen that this bill is very unfair. It's unequitable to the citizens of larger communities of the state because they're asked to contribute such a greater share to attending capital projects. Secondly, it's difficult for smaller communities to comply with the criteria that's been set out in the bill, and the body's rejected all the amendments that were designed to bring some fairness to that process for the smaller communities of the state. Third, it creates a new bureaucracy to do the job that we're presently supposed to be doing, and that's working with our constituents to determine these priorities. It's the job of the legislature for a long time, and now we're creating a new administrative bureaucracy to handle that. Four, it makes executive branch even more powerful than it is today. We already have the most powerful executive branch of any state in the nation, and now we're by legislation giving them more authority over the capital budget process than they already have. I think that's a tremendous mistake in weakening the authority of the legislative branch of government. And fifth, we do have a separation of powers constitutional question about the role of OMB overseeing what should be a legislative capital budget process, and that causes me grave concern too. So there's a whole series of reasons why this bill is flawed and should be rejected by the body.
Question before the Senate is final passage of committee substitute Senate Bill 88, Finance. If there's no further debate, members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so committee substitute Senate Bill 88, Finance, has passed the Senate by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays. Senator Pierce.
Consideration of my vote on Senate Bill 88.
Senator Pierce has served notice of reconsideration on Senate Bill 88. Senator Taylor.
Move the effective date clause.
The effective date clause on Senate Bill 88 has been moved. The question before the Senate is, shall the effective date clause on committee substitute Senate Bill 88, Finance, be adopted? Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so the effective date has failed to be adopted by a vote of 11 yeas to 9 nays. The bill will take effect 90 days after signing by the governor. Will the secretary please read the next item on the calendar? Senate will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order?
Mr. President.
Senator Duncan.
Mr. President, I would move that we bring up the reconsideration of Senate Bill 88 on the same legislative day.
There is objection. We are under a call. The call is not satisfied. Senator Duncan?
Yeah, Mr. President, you know, I think this is a motion that's worth supporting and considering because this, despite the fact that I did oppose this legislation, it is a priority of the third floor. And quite honestly, you know, we're heading towards adjournment. Seems to me that the thing we need to do is get this piece of legislation out of this body and into the other body as quickly as possible if the third floor is going to have an opportunity to get their program through this year. And I think it's critical that they have that opportunity. To delay it one more day doesn't make any sense. You know, it doesn't make sense to really delay this important piece of legislation one more day in this body. And I would urge the members, or unless I can get an explanation, is there a change in the legislation that we overlooked? We offered some amendments. They weren't adopted. I don't think we should be slowing the session down.
Senator Kelly.
Well, Mr. President, I think it's precisely because of the questions raised by the minority that we do need to take another look and see if some of the concerns that were raised today can be addressed by potential working on some amendments tonight. You know, I on this hand, Mr. President, you can count the number of majority bills that have moved to third reading, been passed, and were not reconsidered. On this hand, you can probably count them. Virtually every majority member bill takes 3 days to pass through the Senate. And now the minority wants to rush into passing this bill without a reconsideration on a bill that they themselves set right here and told us was full of all types of flaws. And frankly, I think good legislation is probably more important than one day's speed here.
Mr. President.
Senator Duncan.
Well, the difference between this bill and those majority bills you can count on one hand, this is the governor's bill. This is the governor's priority, and by golly, we should be moving it forward whether we agree with it or not.
The question before the Senate is, shall committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance Reconsideration be taken up the same day? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so the reconsideration of committee substitute Senate Bill 88 Finance will not be taken up the same legislative day. Senator Taylor, would you move that we... I'd like to recess until 5.
Yeah, and I'd lift the call.
Senator Duncan, thank you for lifting the call. Senator Taylor, would you move that we stand in recess until 5?
Move and ask unanimous consent. Senate stand in recess until 5 p.m.
Without objection, Senate in recess until 5. Will the Senate please come back to order? Senator Lehman, would you call the Senate? H.J.R. 41.
Mr. President, I call the Senate. I think if some of us are willing to be here, then all of us should go through the process and enjoy this evening here in the Senate chambers.
The Senate is under a call. Will the Senate please stand at ease? Will the Senate please come back to order? We are on consideration of H.J.R. 41 in second reading.
House Joint Resolution Number 41 by Representatives Williams, Olberg, Moses, and Davies relating to consideration of individual fishery quota share block proposals by North Pacific Fishery Management Council. Rules Committee considered the resolution, recommends calendar and due pass. Report was sent by Senator Jack O'Chair, concurring. Senators Rieger and Helford, Senator Little signed no recommendation. I have no amendments.
Senator Taylor.
Move and ask unanimous consent. H.J.R. 41 be advanced from second to third reading. Engrossed in advance of second and third reading, placed on final pass.
There is objection to the advancement of H.J.R. 41. The question before the Senate is, shall House Joint Resolution Number 41 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, placed on final passage?
May we have it at ease?
The Senate will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? Senator Jaroff.
Thank you, Mr. President. I guess with the resolution, there are a couple of questions that I have. The second whereas, for example, I don't know if I quite agree with this statement here that the IFQ program for halibut and sable fish is intended to provide a long-term sustainable harvest of these resources. I think it's kind of a matter of opinion on there. I don't personally myself think that this is what exactly happens. It's more of economic reasons, but that's kind of a philosophical opinion. On page 2, under the resolve on line 12, there is reference to a block proposal system, and the question has come up there, well, what is a block proposal system? And I don't know if anybody in here can answer that question at this time. Maybe I'll leave that open there. If somebody can explain what the block proposal system is, then I could accept it. but I'm wondering if this block proposal system is in reference to the discussions that the North Pacific Fisheries Management Council has been having over the last 18 months, including a what was called the Sitka block proposal program. And if that's the case, then I can understand it a little bit better. But maybe between now and tomorrow, somebody can come up with a little bit of research and explain what the block proposal system is, because I'm not sure exactly what they mean at this point here in this resolve. And that contains really the thrust of the whole resolution. And if we're going to be supporting a block proposal system, maybe we should have a clearer understanding of what that represents.
Is there further debate on the motion to advance HJR 41? If there's no further debate, the question before the Senate is, shall HJR 41 be considered engrossed, advanced, and placed on final passage? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so, HJR 41 has failed to advance from second to third reading on the same legislative day. Would the secretary please read the next item on the calendar?
Senate CS for House Bill number 66 Finance, amended Senate. It's before the Senate with amendment number one offered.
Mr. President.
Senator Duncan.
I think it's actually before the Senate with my motion to hold it in second reading until tomorrow. I didn't withdraw my motion. Pardon?
Okay. I think the motion to move it to the bottom of the calendar probably superseded the motion to hold it to tomorrow. If you wish to replace that motion, that's...
I'll replace it. What the heck? I didn't know you could just do away with the motion by doing something like that. I thought it would automatically come back, even though it's at the bottom of the calendar. Moving it to the bottom of the calendar didn't mean that we disposed of my motion. My motion was still on... It should have been moved to the bottom of the calendar with my motion. I don't understand the ruling that when you make one motion, it dispenses of another motion.
I think it was... that it was of a higher priority to move it.
It was higher priority
first.
To move it to the bottom, but not to remove my motion to hold it over. But it doesn't make any difference. I'll replace it then.
Okay, the motion before us is to hold Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute House Bill 66 Finance in second reading for tomorrow's calendar.
Mr. President, can you speak to that motion? I still don't think it's a bad idea. And the reason why is that it's getting pretty late in the evening. There's undoubtedly going to be a lot of debate, a lot of amendments offered on... I know I struck a chord with it.
What time was that motion made this morning?
Senator Kelly, that's not a point of order.
I know. Then I withdraw.
That's not even a... Well...
You are in order, Senator Duncan. Yeah. Please continue.
Well, my thought is that, you know... Quite honestly, this bill needs a lot of work. There are a lot of amendments. I think we're better off coming back and debating this in the light of the day, early morning, when we're all feel much better about it. I would like a vote on the motion to hold in second reading. I think that's appropriate.
Senator Curtula.
It is a House bill, so I don't think there'd be any suggestion of really much of a delaying tactic if someone is instinctively feeling that this might be. It is a House bill. And it will go back over to the House, even if we were to get out of here in the next 2 or 3 days. They have ample time to recede or accept if there are House amendments. I don't think it's a bad idea.
Senator I continue Taylor? To oppose the motion.
Thank you, Senator Taylor. I'll follow your advice in that case. The question before the Senate is, shall Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 66 Finance Amended Senate be held in second reading for tomorrow's calendar? Members may proceed to vote. Have all members voted? Does any member wish to change their vote? Senator Rieger?
From yea to nay.
Senator Rieger changes from yea to nay. Any other member wish to change their vote? Would the secretary please lock the roll and record the vote? And so Senate Committee Substitute for Committee Substitute for House Bill 66, Finance Amended Senate, is not held in second reading for tomorrow's calendar. That brings the bill back before us in second reading for amendment and action. Now, Madam Secretary, would you tell us where we are in the consideration of the bill? Do we have one amendment up, or what was it?
Amendment number one, I believe, had been read but not been moved by Senator Salo.
Okay. Senator Salo.
Thank you. I move amendment number one.
There's a motion to adopt amendment number one. Is there objection? There is objection. Senator Salo.
Thank you, Mr. President. Actually, I think in going through this bill, I came across something that I think the purpose of this amendment could best be described by saying we could save a lot of public money here and improve a process. Under existing statute, if the affected parties disagree with the assessor's determination on an exemption, the only appeal process provided is to the state superior court. The language is carried through all versions of HB 66. This amendment would allow for an intermediate appeal process to a hearing officer before it is taken to superior court. This is the same process used for such things as appeals on decisions made by local governments related to alcohol beverage permits. The process for enlisting a hearing officer is set up in statute under AS 4462350 through 4462550. I always think it's a good idea to avoid a costly court process if a hearing officer process can solve a problem, and not just costly in terms of money, but costly in terms of time. I mean, if you're looking here at an appeal on an assessment and you're looking at the overall bill, which is for senior citizens, I mean, these are people, some of them, who don't have a lot of time and maybe don't need a 2 to 3 year superior court process to solve the problem. So I encourage you to think about voting in the affirmative on this amendment and adding a hearing officer, which I think would be an improvement to the bill.
Further debate on the Senator Cretula.
There's no one as steely-eyed as a tax assessor, frankly, and who is as cold and as unconcerned. That's their posture, as a rule, about little nuances or differences. And, of course, they're the final determinant after you've passed the time of the appraisal and going before the committee for another look. And it happens continuously with elderly people that I have had the experience of an 85, now 87-year-old person whose taxes, when we looked at the list of comparisons, were three times as high as the neighbors, at least. And I went in to the appraiser thinking I could be of some help with this elderly person. And, well, you've passed the time, too bad. And no particular concern about equity. It was an obviously non-equitable situation, unequitable situation. I'd like to see somebody in the middle here for another look at it. I'm not sure how this hearing officer might work in, but I think it's been thought out. And otherwise, you can just say, well, the court is the next step. And frankly, again, these people have an immense arrogance, you know. And obviously, they do have a directive. But it's almost as though they personally were, they were questioned personally, and their integrity was questioned when you come up with something like this. I just say that it makes some sense to not leave them as the court of last resort in these cases, this side of the actual courtroom, which costs an immense amount of money. I think she has a good idea.
Senator Duncan?
President, may we have a very brief at ease, please?
Senator, will stand at ease. Will the Senate please come back to order? Senator Salo, will you cede the floor?
Well, Mr. President, just sort of to wrap up what this amendment's about, it inserts on page 2, line 25, inserts a sentence that says the determination of the assessor may be appealed to a hearing officer, and quotes the statute portion where that would happen. And then there's a couple of other language changes that would make that fall into place. And again, right now, if someone is has a disagreement with an assessor's determination, they're told to go to court. I think that that is not the fairest thing that we could do for the senior citizens of this state, and that it would be a vast improvement to add a hearing officer in here to make a cheaper, simpler, and speedier process to of appeal for citizens in Alaska.
Senator Rieger.
Mr. President, if I read this amendment correctly, it reads that the assessor will make a decision, then the person can appeal the determination of the assessor to a hearing officer, and then a hearing officer makes the decision, and then the person can make an appeal of the determination of the hearing officer. It seems like there's a lot of stages of appeal here, and I just wonder how many stages of appeal are really needed for a question of assessing real property. If I remember once looking at 4462.350 to 4462.550 as referred to, and I don't have the statutes in front of me, but if I recall, that's a fairly involved process where the state appoints a hearing officer and then the hearing officer goes through a lot of determinations. If I remember it, there's quite a bit of language in that statutes referred to. I wonder if the maker of the amendment could speak to that.
Senator Salo.
President, the senator from Anchorage is correct that it would do exactly that. It would add the process to the hearing officer in between, and then if you disagreed with the results of the hearing officer, you could go to Superior Court. No matter how much language there is relative to the appointment of a hearing officer and the hearing process, I can assure you that it's still far simpler than taking this appeal to the Superior Court, and far less expensive in terms of time. So